This is a weekly podcast to update you on the volcanic activity of the week. I'm one of your hosts, Alessandro Musu.
And I'm your other host, Corinne Jorgensen. We're PhD students at the University of Geneva.
We study volcanoes and are here to give you all the hot volcano news.
First, the quick update, and then the focus of the week.
It's March 15 at the time of recording, and here are your quick updates.
We'll start in the Americas, where we saw ash advisories from Fuego, Reventador, Nevado del Ruiz, Descabizado, Grande, in Chile, Sangay, Semencayo, and Nevado de Chile. Alessandro has just removed all the ash plume heights from the list, so I do not know.
Yeah. I did because I want you to guess who won the America Tallest Plume competition, Corinne.
I mean, I feel like Semencayo hasn't won in the last few weeks. So I'm going to say, going with my girl, Semencayo.
So, as has been usual in the last month, Semencayo plume height remains undetectable most of the time. And the new usual, Nevado de Ruiz, was just winning. But then, as usual for Semencayo, at the last minute, it booms with a high plume eruption.
That's my girl. Amazing. So Semencayo won.
This week is a week of friendship in the volcano world. So the usual Semencayo and the new usual Nevado de Ruiz won together, both with a 7.3 kilometer tall plume.
Okay, I like that. I like a week of friendship. Friendship is good.
At the second position, we have Sangay with a 6.4 kilometer tall plume, and then Fuego with a 5.5 kilometers one.
So Fuego in Guatemala produced a huge pyroxysm on March 8th, consisting of an intense lava fountaining activity, which lasted for about 26 hours and ended on March 9th. The ash column, which accompanied the event, was around 7 to 8 kilometers tall. The effusive activity also increased with a significant increase in the lava flow length.
Alert level remains yellow at Davidoff in Alaska, where the seismic arrest is continuing with shallower earthquakes, presenting a maximum magnitude of about 3.9. Alaska was pretty busy this week. We also report to you news from Pavlov, where the explosive and effusive activity is continuing and a new spatter cone is forming actually. But not only a gray sitkin in Aleutian Island, Alaska as well, the effusive activity continued over the past week with an increase in the effusion rate.
Dang, it's getting pretty hot in Alaska. Maybe we should go for vacation.
I don't know. I'm not convinced yet. I'm still considering Canary Island for a nice hot summer vacation or Sicily. I might change my mind, Corinne. Let's see. Or maybe Costa Rica, where Turrialba volcano activity continues at low levels with small ash and gas emissions.
So this week we also have some updates from Africa. In Ethiopia, Erte Ale volcano continues its activity. Here, the lava lake walls are slowly widening. Effusive activity is also continuing at Nyiragongo in the DRC, where the lava is continuously filling the main lava lake and a high amount of SO2 has been detected from satellite imagery.
Sadly, no news from Euro. Etna is taking some time to relax and Stromboli is keeping doing what is for him usual to do, so erupting in a super cute way. So let's move to Asia, where we saw ash advisories from Sumeru, Suanozojima, Merapi, Ibu, Lewotolo, Taal, Manam, Bezimiani in Kamchatka, and Shivalush.
Okay, so are we doing a tallest plume of Asia this week? Who won?
Of course, yes. And of course, the new entry one, Bezimiani, with a 8.2 kilometer tall plume. That makes this volcano win both Asia and the world competition for the tallest plume. At the second place, we have Sumeru with a 4.4 kilometer tall plume. And in the third position, an old love, Shivalush, that was almost there for the second position with a 4.3 kilometer tall plume.
Shivalush. Okay, the lava dome is continuing to grow at Merapi volcano in the Philippines. There's been numerous avalanches resulting from a partial collapse of the dome in the southwest sector, and this descended for about 3 kilometers on March 8th.
Seismic unrest is increasing at Kirishima volcano in Kyushu Island, Japan, where on March the 2nd, alert level had been already raised to 2 after 17 seismic events. So we will keep you updated on this area.
Activity continues as always at Taal in the Philippines, where there has been intense degassing activity reported, with steam plumes rising more than 1 kilometer in height.
The main news is from Bezimiani in Kamchatka, where a new dome has been extruded on top of the previous dome.
Whoa, dome on top of a dome.
Yeah, this is typical Kamchatka. You might remember your beloved dome on top of the dome dolphin too in Shielded.
I do remember this dolphin dome. It's amazing. I love everything about it.
Yeah. So anyway, unstable masses at the dome collapsed during the past week, forming small avalanches and dense ash plumes rising for 4.5 kilometers high in the sky. That was already enough for the volcano to win the Asian taller plume competition, but it just wanted to be sure. So for that reason, yesterday on March 14th, it produced a 6.1 kilometer tall plume, but then it realized that was not enough for the World Cup. So today it just came out with a 8.2 kilometer tall plume.
That's my boy!
Green?
Yes.
Talking about Shielded, a small 4.3 ash plume has been detected today, so it's not very small. So who knows that maybe we are going to have some news from the Dolphins volcano soon. You know, lava domes have whale backs, Shielded domes have dolphin backs.
Okay, that's it for the quick updates. Thanks to our usual sources, Volcano Discovery and the Smithsonian Global Volcanism Program.
So now it's time for the focus.
Let's do it. So this week for the focus, we're going to talk about black body radiation.
For some of the more science-minded folks, this might be a term you are familiar about from chatting about space and stars.
So what is this? Okay, so to have black body radiation, first you need to have a black body, which is defined in Marianne White's book, The Physical Properties of Materials. And I quote, "A black body is an idealized material that absorbs light of all wavelengths. It does not reflect or transmit any light, hence the adjective black. It is also a perfect emitter of light of all wavelengths. An ideal black body emits a spectrum of light, and this spectrum depends only on the temperature of the black body. Black body radiation is often referred to as incandescence."
Now, incandescence is a term we are more familiar with in volcanology. Incandescence is black body radiation.
Okay, so how does this like actually work? So before we talk about that, a little physics primer first. So light is both a particle and a wave, et cetera, et cetera. But when we talk about optics and light, we usually just talk about waves. And different wavelengths of light are associated with different colors.
We only see the colors that are in what's called the visible light spectrum, but other wavelengths exist too, like microwaves, gamma rays, infrared, or the one that you get when you are on the seashore, the ultraviolet light. And so usually we see colors because we are seeing reflected light, and reflected light is the color of that object, and all the other colors, wavelengths, are just absorbed from the body.
But if we take the case of an ideal black body, which, if we recall, absorbs light of all wavelengths, it doesn't reflect or transmit any light, then its light that we see is not from reflectance, but instead from emission.
The wavelengths of these emissions, and thus the color we observe, is directly connected to the temperature of the body. At high temperature, the wavelength that is emitted is lower, and in the visible light spectrum, lower wavelengths are on the blue, violet end of the rainbow.
But of course, nothing we interact with on a regular basis is an ideal black body, so there is some absorbance and emissions to take into consideration. Anyways, at room temperature, black body radiation our eyes can't detect. But at 700 degrees Celsius, most of the light is still in the infrared spectrum, but some of the longer wavelengths are in the visible light spectrum, so we can start to see red light.
You are probably familiar with this if you think about embers in a fire glowing red.
As we just said, as the body gets hotter, it shifts the wavelengths to become a little bit longer, so we go from red to orange to yellow to white to blue. Though, actually, white light is a bit of a trick, since when you get white light, it means that the entire light spectra is being emitted, so you're seeing a combination of all the wavelengths at once.
Yeah, and this is a change in a lot of colors, but it is not as much color as the Kelimutu lakes. Anyway, this means you can sort of do a back calculation to figure out how hot something is by looking at its color. There is some spectral overlap, and it of course also depends on what other light is around. But generally, red is at 700 Celsius degree, orange is 1000, 2000 Celsius degree, and when you see yellow, it is likely well above 2000 Celsius degrees.
Now, where volcanoes come into play here, you can apply this generalization to magma you see erupting. A few weeks back, we chatted about Ol Doño Llangai, and we talked about how that magma erupts black. This is because it's relatively cold magma. It's erupting at about 600 degrees Celsius, so it's not emitting any black body radiation, at least in wavelengths that our eyes can see.
Though, we will say just because something isn't red hot doesn't mean you can touch it. 600 Celsius degree is very hot.
Yeah, don't touch things that are 600 degrees Celsius. Honestly, don't touch things that are over like 40 degrees Celsius. That's too hot.
Yeah, anyway, if you bake something in your oven, I don't know, a cake, it's potentially not neither black. No red, no orange, absolutely no yellow. It depends on the color of the cake. But anyway, don't touch it.
But if your cake is red hot from black body radiation, I would recommend you don't eat it. It might not be a good time. Anyways, if you're interested in this sort of light theory stuff, I really recommend Marianne White's book, The Physical Properties of Materials. It's a really interesting and detailed book about material science. It taught me actually a lot of things about geology, really getting into the nitty-gritty details of things. And of course, it's one of the sources for today's focus, along with NASA's article on visible light spectrum and a delightful post on physics staff exchange by user CG. So that's it for the focus.
So yeah, thank you for listening and see you next week.